Good morning, everyone, and thank you very much for being here. My name is Rita Cook, and I'm going to talk about a project that I worked with through Michigan Tech and also with collaborators from the U.S. Forest Service. And what we did was use prescribed burning and also mechanical harvesting treatments in a red pine forest in the Upper Peninsula of Michigan. And so this is a picture of my site when it's on fire, and this is when it's not on fire. This is a site that's mainly red pine, and this is a species you may not be too familiar with depending on where you are in the world. It's mainly in the northeastern United States and in the Great Lakes states up a little bit into Canada. And also on the site we had white pine, jack pine, and a little bit of red oak. They're good-sized red pine trees that are about 11 inches at diameter at breast height and 49 feet. And this is an interesting site because a lot of the red pine in the Midwest is now in plantations. It's a very popular plantation tree. But this was a naturally regenerated site originating from a fire about 80 years ago. And in putting in these treatments, specifically the harvest treatments, what we were hoping to accomplish was to come up with a stand that was structurally diverse and also had species diversity, encouraging some of the white pine to come in and more of the red oak component. We also wanted these treatments to be something that could be used in other red pine sites like this on a large scale. And a little bit more about this tree. It is a fire-adapted tree, so this is why people are curious about the use of prescribed fire. The natural fire interval is a low ground fire about every 20 years, and then a big crown fire, stand replacing fire, about every 200 years. And this picture kind of shows the thick, platy bark that it gets that protects an adult tree in a fire. Fire also improves the seedbed for the regeneration of seedlings. Now, focusing in on our own study, what we were working with was treatment areas of about 42 acres. And in these treatment areas, we had a grid of 20 plot centers that were 50 meters apart, surrounded by a 50-meter buffer. And at the plot centers, we took data on a 1/10 acre basis. And then zooming back out, this is what the entire study site looked like. We had four different treatment types. The white rectangles show our controls, where we didn't do anything. The red are where there was a prescribed burn, and this was a low surface prescribed burn was sent through, just a burn. The blue rectangles are where we harvested, and it wasn't a clear cut, but it was a reduction down to 50% crown closure, so some trees were left on the site. And the purple boxes are where we did the harvest and then the burn following the harvest, so both those treatments together. And just to help you visualize this a little bit, this is what the controls looked like. This was the harvest only. This was the burn only, and you can see the orange undergrowth from the fire. And this is the burn and harvest, and you can see there's still some of the downed wood from the harvest. And this is when it was still smoking, so this is just a few hours after the burn. And this is that same area a few weeks later when it had started to green up quite a bit. The data that we collected on these 10th acre plots, with each tree was tagged, and we looked at the species, the diameter at breast height, the tree height, the height to first live crown, and the height to continuous live crown, so the continuous canopy, tree health, and also scorch height as a possible measure of fire intensity. So this is an entomology meeting. Here's our bud. This is Dendroctonus valens, the red turpentine beetle. And it's a very interesting insect because in the pre-treatment data collection, we didn't see this bug hardly at all. I think there was one instance where we saw this insect. And then it came into the site only after the treatments had been applied. This insect has a 1 to 2 year life cycle in this climate, and it goes into the live trees and to the stumps. And you'll find it at the very base of the tree or the stump. And the way you can spot it is this white blob here. That's a pitch tube where the tree has actually tried to physically pitch the insect out. So this is another picture of, it's kind of a mix of the frass and also the pitch, and it kind of looks like popcorn. And that's on a scorched tree. See right in the, there we go, right yonder. And this is in a stump, and you can see it infest right at the base of the stumps. So in looking at this data, we used our 1/10 acre plots again and looked at all the live trees and assessed if there was an active infestation by this insect based on whether we saw the pitch tubes or not. And we also looked at all the stumps within the 1/10 acre plots. And in 2006, what we found was that the control areas, again, had no red turpentine beetle at all. The harvest only and the burn only areas had lower proportion of live trees that were infested, but there was a significantly higher amount of trees infested with red turpentine beetle where the burn and harvest treatments have been applied together. And then 2007, this past fall when we went back, what we found was that the burn only had kind of caught up, and we had a comparable proportion of live trees infested in the burn and harvest and the burn only areas. It's still, the controls had no red turpentine beetle in them, and the harvest only had a very low proportion of standing live trees that were infested. And looking at the stumps, now this compares between the 2 years, and there were only two treatment areas that had stumps, the harvest only and the burn and harvest. And we see is there hasn't been a change in the 2 years. They are comparable in 2 years and about the same proportion of stumps infested in these two treatment types. So in summary of what this data is showing us is that with red turpentine beetle in the live trees, it's related to fire. It was only in the treatment areas where we had burned that we saw this insect coming in significantly. However, with the stumps, this appears to occur independently of fire. And when you see red turpentine beetle, that doesn't mean it's a death sentence for this tree. The trees can resist these attacks. However, a matter of concern is the possibility of other insects coming in, like the Ips pinei, which would attack the weakened trees and might result in more mortality in the stand. And these populations could build up over time. So that's something that remains to be seen. And as a little side note, some other data that we're still looking at from this site includes pitfall trapping to assess the biodiversity of ground-dwelling arthropods, understory herbaceous vegetation surveys, seedling and sapling, and as I said earlier, because fire can impact the regeneration of seedlings on the site, spore trapping, and also sentinel red pine seedlings to look at shoot blight diseases like Spirochetus and Sciococcus, which can be a concern in some of these sites. All right. And what we're hoping that this data can result in is help forest managers to have an idea of what to expect if they're using prescribed fire, and also in the case of wildfire. And this is a picture of my site when it was actually burning. And cue the Sleeper Lakes fire, which happened in August of 2007, just a few miles from this site. A 19,000-acre wildfire is actually the third largest fire in Michigan's history. So hopefully the data that we're collecting will help forest managers know what to expect in the case of a large wildfire like this one. And it'll be really interesting to see how that all pans out. So I thank you very much for your attention. I would love to take questions and hear my acknowledgments also. Thank you. Yes, sir.
Once the trees are attacked by the red turpentine beetle, was it shown that once they were attacked that more beetles came to the tree?
Well, and the question is, did more beetles come to the tree after an attack?
Was there an aggregation pheromone?
It's thought that there is no aggregation pheromone. It's actually like the resin from the tree that's attracting these insects. So, uh-oh, what do you got?
The vertically transmitted fungal symbiont that is duplicated.
Okay.
The smell of that attracts other beetles.
Okay, it's not a pheromone, but it's from the fungus. Okay.
That's so interesting.
Okay. That's great. Thank you very much. Does that help?